This episode of Fermented Adventure the Podcast is sponsored by Brewskits, handcrafted dog treats made from spent beer grains, oats, barley, and rye. No chemical preservatives, a great source of fiber, and packed with protein. Visit brewskits.com to see the full selection of treats for your dog and your cat. Receive 15% off, no minimum purchase, on your first order by typing in lowercase FA2024 at checkout. Cheers! Hello, ladies and gentlemen, craft spirit enthusiasts, and those interested in the intoxicating world of craft distilleries, cideries, meaderies, wineries, and the occasional foray into breweries. It's Rich Shane, and welcome to Fermented Adventure, the podcast, where we bring you the fascinating people that are making the mash, fermenting, distilling, bottling, pouring, and delivering to you some of the finest libations in the world. Before we get started, here are a few housekeeping items. Thank you for bringing the podcast into wherever you are and whatever you're doing. We truly are grateful that you have chosen to listen and make us part of your day. It would mean the world to us if you left a 5-star review. This helps us climb in the rankings, and it makes it easier for others to find us. Don't hesitate to leave us your comments as well. If the podcast didn't meet your expectations, tell us why. We're always striving to improve. You can find us at fermentedadventure.com. We are on Instagram and Facebook as Fermented Adventure. Email us at fermentedadventure@gmail.com. All right, FA Nation, let's meet our guests. He's Justin Corey. I'm Rich Shane. This is Fermented Adventure, the podcast. Justin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Rich. I appreciate it. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Bevfluence. We're going to talk Bevfluence today. What is Bevfluence?
Well, realistically, it is the answer to all of your dreams and prayers. But in business terms, we're a group of writers and bloggers who got together some years ago, actually back in 2016, and said we want a better way to connect with brands. We want a better way to connect with, you know, at conferences. We want a better way to connect, you know, and have these better meetings, you know, better experiences when we're going and traveling around and then tasting wine, tasting spirits, tasting beer, and cider. So, in a nutshell, we're a group of people who just wanted a better connection with, with the industry as a whole.
You stress better, and I'm sure there were conversations about how to achieve that. How did better come about? Like, what were some of those working conversations to launch Bevfluence?
There were a lot. At one point in mid 2017, we had about 19 bloggers on the team, working on different aspects. We had put together these master email lists, and everybody had like a little spreadsheet that they were going to email out certain brands and certain DMOs, you know, direct destination marketing organizations, and, you know, Visit Lodi or, you know, the Pennsylvania Distillers Guild. our conversation started at a conference that we felt many of us in Bevfluence today and in the community, who are still in the community, we felt certain conferences just weren't giving us what we needed as professional growth opportunities. So we started that conversation first. And in 2018, we tried to do our own symposium, which was great. We sold all of one ticket. Everyone in the community said, yes, this is a great idea. Love it. Love the schedule. Love the, you know, what you guys are focusing on. We'd booked a hotel. We'd booked a block of rooms. We booked, you know, everything. And in the end, everyone said, oh, even the brand said how much they love it. Call us next year when you've got a little more success. And that was very frustrating, to be honest with you, because everyone says it's a great idea, but no one's willing to actually just say, let's put the price of a ticket or let's put the price of a sponsorship down as proof that they love the idea. So the symposium idea, which is, you know, just kind of a larger conference, fizzled out quickly. And we realized maybe one of the things we wanted to do was focus on smaller groups. So we do three core things at Bevfluence. The first thing is where we kind of started, which is the experience. Traveling and taking writers, bloggers, podcasters with us when we travel, usually renting a house, or if we can find, suitable accommodation for, 8 to 12 people. That's usually our goal. That's where we kind of focus in. Instead of having 300 people coming to your destination, it's 12 who are very intently focused, willing to do a fully immersive experience, learn, and then share, content and share their knowledge and then share to their own followers. So the first is the experience. The second is our competition, which is called the Best of Befluence. It is very much different than the traditional wine or spirits competition out there. We still have the blind judging portion, which everyone loves, but it's realistically, having been a judge and having been a steward for many years now, it's a, your product is in front of a judge for about 5 minutes max. Unless it makes it, in category, unless it makes it to the grand panel where it's in front of another round of judges for another 2 or 3 minutes, and they say, okay, I like this one, two or three, this, and then it becomes, okay, this is the best of class, best of show, best of category. Ours is a little different in that we send it out to several blind panels, as well as the end of the competition, we have what's called a bartender lab. And we do this for wine, spirits, and cider, and anything else that gets sent to us. We don't focus very much on beer just because it's its own behemoth. And so the bartenders get to come in, as well as sommeliers and local buyers get to come in and play with those samples, because otherwise they're going to wind up in somebody's basement. Literally, I have a couple of hundred bottles myself that are from competitions that, nobody wanted them at the end, and that's what happens when you quote unquote dispose of samples. So that's the second thing is our competition, and then the third thing is really the bartender lab, kind of on its own as well. We do things like little libations. We have a program where we send out micro samples to bartenders, and they produce whatever they want with it, and they get to play around with blind samples and have some fun with it. So those early conversations led us to the experience model, led us to, let's bring the community in smaller chunks and have some fun with it. And it's been a lot of fun. In 2019, we did Denver, and we had quite a few pitches out to other areas, including Michigan, New York, a few others, and then 2020 happened. And now we're
Which
trying to.
we're in that anniversary period right now.
Yeah.
All governors came on the TV or your radio just at this time and said, "Hey, flatten the curve, stay in place. This is the day. This is ground zero 4 years ago." And how did that impact what Bevfluence was doing in the mission?
Honestly, it was more impactful than I think we realized it was going to be. When you can't leave your house, or at least shouldn't, and we were fine. My wife came home, yeah, about 3 days ago, 4 years ago. It was the 16th or something like that. And she said, "Hey, they sent us home, and we have no idea when we're going to be back." So, my consulting, my side jobs, and my consulting dried up completely. Because I couldn't travel. Everybody had pivoted. That was the word of 2020, to make a hand sanitizer. A lot of the distillery clients that I was working with decided to make hand sanitizer instead of focus on production. And it's not like I could go there anyway. So we did some things online. We did some things virtually. We did some book reviews, cocktail book reviews. We definitely did some good fun campaigns. Not on the scale that we'd wanted. When we're on site, we can do a lot bigger being on site. But I hate to overuse that word pivot, but everybody had to do something. And that's when I launched my second podcast was Friggin' Ramble, with some people that I was working with on the whiskey side of the industry. So 2020 through 2023 really was a challenging time. Just trying to everyone's trying to crawl back out of, the hole we were in, and at the same time figure out how to turn all of these Zoom events into in-person events. But we're enjoying 24 so far. We've done a lot of travel already, most of the team, and yeah, just looking forward to kind of continuing that growth.
So you speak to experiences, and it sounds like this is ramping back up for you, getting into that full immersion of being someplace. Talk about some of the places you have been in the last couple of months, and talk about what's on the calendar for upcoming events that you have planned.
Absolutely. The team, the BevFluence team, is coming out actually here to California for a few days of planning and organizing. What we do first, I'll talk a little bit about our process. What we do first is we kind of look at where we want to go, where we think is something that'd be interesting, distinct. I actually went to a travel show on Saturday to start those conversations and see what would be interesting. It would be fun to go to something like the Cook Islands in the South Pacific. Do they have a large enough beverage industry to support a trip of our nature? The answer is technically no, but that doesn't mean we can't also focus on the cultural and the culinary. So that requires a rethink. That requires sitting down and really talking about, okay, where we really want to spend our time. Europe is easy. Of course, every country has its own somewhat distinct food and beverage culture. Africa is a continent, the same. Asia, the same. There are some logistical, issues. Latin America as well. So, what we will probably do is sit down when everyone's here, and we're going to start talking about where we want to go in late 2024 to 2025, and probably even through 2026. So we send out those emails and start the conversation. It'll probably be Scotland if we're going to focus on whiskey. Kentucky, inside the states is also something we want to do quite often. So 3 or 4 a year in the states, and then 1, 2, or 3, depending on how we can schedule everything internationally. So we're probably going to look at the UK in 2025. We're probably going to look at Asia and the South Pacific. So if we're going to do Asia, let's do Japan, let's do Taiwan, let's do potentially Hong Kong, maybe India. And then if we're going to be in that area, I know it sounds silly, but maybe Australia, New Zealand, because it is closer than where we are now. So.
Those are some bold trips. Those are some, like, you're starting to name places and I'm getting excited. I'm packing my bags. How do I sign up for this?
There is a gauntlet that people have to do, which is essentially go to our website, click on where we do our registrations, and fill out a form. It's a grueling form of about 3 or 4 questions, I think, and then you're good to go. And we sit down as a committee, and we kind of see, okay, who would make the most sense to go to these places with us. I did have someone kind of call us out the other day when they were looking on our Instagram, and I had to explain what we do versus, what their expectation is. They said, "Oh, we have a minimum. You have to have X number of followers." And I said, "That's not us. We don't have BevFluence doesn't have the huge following. Individually, I think I have more followers on my personal accounts than our business account, and that's how most things are." So I was explaining to it, to this organization, this is how we do it. We bring those that have the larger audiences with us. We don't have ourselves, the company doesn't have that large audience, because our audience as BevFluence is the brand. It's the DMO. It's the, it's visit, Lodi or visit some of these other places. It's, distilleries and wineries. It's not consumers. So yes, we would love to have you come along on some of these trips. You're out in on the East Coast, right?
Yep, just outside of Philadelphia.
We are
I
planning
wasn't
on some.
lobbying for us. I'm hearing people listen to the podcast and say, you know what? I've got this presence. I think this is something would be exciting. Not to say I wouldn't want to go. I mean, you've named places that are on our bucket list to go. And, that's certainly having people of like mind and having people of different palettes and different takes on an experience, to me, heightens the conversation. It makes it more exciting. And if you're with somebody that maybe does not like what you like as much, but you mentioned culinary, and I would not, and I don't know why, because the first word is bev in terms of fluence, the first part. I would not have thought of that whole immersion of culinary and some spirits or wines. But if you're out with somebody's sharing a platter and it's something you want to try, but whoever you're with doesn't like it, you really get this whole synergy and this whole conversation. It's relationship building and around wine and spirits and all the things. It's really about that camaraderie. It really is.
Brewskits, beer, grain, dog bones, brewskits, your dog will go wild. Brewskits, beer, grain, dog bones, a healthy alternative for your pup.
Brewskits are all natural and made in the USA. Visit brewskit.com. That's BREWSCUID.com.
So yeah, to be honest, yes, we would absolutely love to bring in more people into the community. We have about 40 or 50 influencers, what we call Bevfluencers, that we like to work with, that we've kind of brought into the community over the past few years. Yeah, we definitely want more. We're all about growth. We're all about kind of growing the community and making it not necessarily better, but just bringing people into the fold. So we'll be bringing you and some of your audience along on some of these trips for sure.
Okay.
I'm a culinary trained chef. I wanted to be a chef when I was growing, coming up and growing up. That's where I wanted to spend my time. And then I was in a class one day, and one of the instructors was talking about consulting, and he was talking about other aspects of the industry. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. So then I started working on the booze side and the consulting side. And it was fascinating to me. And to your point, yes, there is this camaraderie and collaboration. And it's very difficult in most cultures to talk about their wine, their beverage, industry without talking about food. It's almost impossible to go to a destination and have the full experience without both things. The culture, well, three things really. The culture, which includes the food and beverage, and then also how those things came about. Why does the Canary Islands, for example, have banana liqueurs? It's because they grow bananas. That's part of their culture. That's part of, who they are and part of their history. So it is very difficult to separate those things for us. Our bartender lab director Chandler, she is a culinary trained chef as well. So we both love to geek out on these things. We are probably going to spend some time when the team is here in California preparing some different variations of risotto and doing some pairings. So because we do love to eat and talk and chat and the best conversations you will have in life, I think, are around a table with a pot of risotto and some 16 bottles of wine that has happened to be open for a tasting. So that's a typical Tuesday around here, but yeah, it's definitely something that brings people together and increases the creativity, I think.
Well, today is a Tuesday. So what's the risotto you're making today?
Today I'm not making risotto.
No risotto Tuesday today.
I do like that. I may hashtag risotto Tuesday. We'll see how that goes in the future. But today's a clean the kitchen day.
Pardon the interruption. Thank you so much for listening to Fermented Adventure the podcast. Could you do us a favor? Hit that follow button. It makes it easier for others to find us, and it helps us climb in the rankings. Take a screenshot of the podcast, post it, tag us, and let everyone know that you listen to the Fermented Adventure podcast. Now, back to our podcast. Where did you go to culinary school?
I went to Phoenix College, actually. I went to community college version of culinary school.
It's really those influences that you talk about as you have instructors or people in your life that give you that direction and you never know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
For you, what was that early journey for you? And I can say, as for Dawn and I in our experience, it was gin that brought us into the whole fermented adventure. For you, what was it? I mean, you mentioned consulting, but what appealed to you in the wine, the spirits? I mean, what was your gateway?
I was working in restaurants all over the country, really. And one restaurant I was working at in Virginia, I was constantly, because I was a culinary person, people were always asking me, well, what would you pair with this? And I want to say that first time I got that question, I was probably 19 and I had no idea. And then for years, continued getting that question and I still had no idea. So finally I was like, okay, let me figure out the wine side. Let me understand this better. So I actually went into a Total Wine and More in Newport News, Virginia. This was early 2000, probably 2002, 2003. And I walked in and I asked for an application, filled it out. They said, no, you have no booze experience. You have no wine experience. You have no knowledge of these things. No, thank you. So, okay, I'll be back. So I went in the next week. They said, no. I went in for the next 50 weeks and they said no, until I walked in the last time and they said, well, shit, you keep coming in every week, we'll just hire you. And that began my wine journey. So I think I got hired on like a Thursday, a day of training and a few other things on a Friday. And then Saturday, they're like, hey, stand at this table and pour wine as people come in on Saturday. And so that was my first thrown in the deep end experience. And I fell in love with Spanish wines. I fell in love with French wines. I was like, this is a job? People just stand here and pour wine and they get to talk about wine and I don't have to be on my feet 19 hours a day in a kitchen burning myself, grabbing a pan that I forgot was hot, 700 degree ovens and steel-toed boots. So I'm going to do this. So that was the beginning of my journey. In the wine side, how I specifically got onto whiskey, I'd learned about whiskey. I tasted whiskey. I was a big Scotch fan in my early 20s. And I went down for a consulting conference to Kentucky. And some of my mentors were like, hey, we're going to go out to dinner. Come with us. And I had my first bourbon flight. And this was 2007. And I was stunned. I was like, wow, I did not know American whiskey could taste like this. And so from there, I kind of started a journey on American whiskey and American bourbon specifically, or bourbon specifically. And the collection from there just grew. The passion from there just grew. I launched Wizard of Whiskey some years later. I started writing a book. It's a whole thing. But that for me was the beginning of my whiskey journey.
You've threaded in a theme twice. One was talking about the idea that, all right, there aren't enough followers, there aren't enough eyeballs. And the other part is you don't have enough experience. And I think one of the beautiful things that where you impact people is you give them the ability to enter into these worlds where they are. What Bedfluence does is you provide content, certainly, but you provide opinions and opportunity, and you create a forum for people to say, all right, I'm going to enter where I am and be part of the experience, because realistically, and I'm sure you experience this as well, wine, whiskey, this is an intimidating place, isn't it? If you don't know what you're talking about, because we as humans, we don't want to sound silly, foolish, that we don't know what we're talking about. Right?
Absolutely. I 100%. And I love that description you kind of gave us. So yeah, I've met people with advanced WSETs, wine and spirits education trusts, and these advanced beverage degrees, as you would call them, who don't have the social media following. And I've also met people who are just great photographers on Instagram, who are just putting out good pictures, good quality content. And there's this very weird amalgamation of those things that brands that we work with, they don't understand. They see everything as the same. Oh, they have the followers, they must know what they're doing or they're talking about. Not always the case. And sometimes the people who you wouldn't think know what they're talking about know more than me. And that's fantastic. I love having a conversation where I'm not the geekiest one in the room. I'm not the one who has the biggest whiskey collection, which is rarely the case, unfortunately, as far as just the number of bottles. But I love having these conversations with these deep dives in there. They'll talk about who the distiller was in 1989. The beverages are a snapshot of a time. Food grows, food goes on the table, gets consumed, moves on from a season. A bottle of wine, a bottle of whiskey, even a bottle of cider is a snapshot in time of everything that happened in that year. People were born, grapes were crushed, work was done, ideas were flourished, a new label was designed for that bottle. Some artist was commissioned to do that label, and now it's on my table 15 years later. That is a journey in time of that bottle. And that's very cool to think about. That, I think, is the story a lot of people are trying to tell on social media, rather than just the names, the dates, the facts, the it's 16%, Cab Franc, 80%, Cab Sav, and the rest is Merlot. Those are fun things to know, but the journey itself is fun. What are you eating with this wine? Maybe it's risotto, maybe it's a bologna sandwich. Go for it either way. And share that experience. That's the stuff that I love, and I think our team, we love to talk about and we love to do. We do every year, we do a junk food pairing where we buy the most random shit and we open the most random stuff to it. Champagne, bourbon, yeah, everything. Look, Madeira, port, and we just have fun. What champagne goes best with Cheetos? That you're gonna see from us, I hope, this year, So.
What I see and what I find from watching your space, your social media, your brand is you'll also introduce things to me, these smaller producers. It's not these high-end producers, it's these smaller producers. And look, you said cider a couple of times. Cider is still, to me, and you can speak to this, in its infancy as to where the potential is monumental to people drinking cider. It's gaining traction little by little, but as people start to get into cider, and we're big fans, they understand that this is something that, if they've never had it, is so different but so similar in a lot of ways to what they have been drinking. But there's stories behind these ciders. There's people behind these ciders. There's bursts and as you talk about, but you're bringing some things to my view that I wouldn't know was out there, or I wouldn't know how to get a hold of until until you as a Bev influencer bring it to my perspective.
Absolutely. Cider is having what a lot of commodities have, which is a renaissance. They've been drinking cider for thousands of years, realistically, in Europe. And in the United States, much like bourbon, much like other beverages, it didn't quite catch on the way that dry ciders in Spain, France, and England caught on. So what you had is 70s, 80s, 90s, is you had these super sweet ciders. And that is what everyone assumed. Everyone's got their story. Oh, I had gin when I was in high school and I don't drink it anymore. Oh, I, you know, my thing is tequila. My thing is rum. Or some people, my thing is cider. It's just too sweet. The craft cider movement, really, really started to take off, as did the craft spirits movement around the same time, right after the craft beer movement. Granted, you have cideries who've been operating in the States for a century. One of the cool things is, just like whiskey, just like wine, there's such a variety. And there's actually even a little more of a variety for cider, because there are hundreds of apples that can be used and hundreds of potential co-ferments. Those are one of the cool things happening in cider right now, which is co-ferments. Taking, you know, grapes and apples and co-fermenting them together, and different versions of apples and co-fermenting them together as well. So you have this incredible dry cider movement now. There's hundreds of them. Hundreds of great cider brands out there, small brands, small family orchard owners in, you know, the Pacific Northwest and New York and Pennsylvania, in Ohio, Maine, Vermont. There's a ton out there. So cider is definitely worth exploring if you really want to geek out on something. If you want a new obsession, it should be cider.
Where do you see the future of Bevfluence in terms of, you're making some plans, you're bringing the team together? Where would you like to see the impact or the influence of Bevfluence over the next year or so?
Over the next year, we're sending out quite a few pitches to various organizations, trying to get known. I'd like to see our brand recognition and our own kind of brand strength growing, so that people know who we are and what we do. The biggest question I get is, what do we do? And then I have to explain it. And it doesn't make sense to a lot of people at first. We specialize in, you know, our three specific areas: experiences, competitions, and the Bartender Lab. And in order to do that, we have to put out a lot of content to get people to pay attention to us, as does anybody. Unless you're Jim Beam or Jack Daniels, you have to put out a lot of content. Or as a brand, you know, from a brand's perspective, you have to put out a lot of bottles, which is why one distillery will put out 16 different iterations of something to get noticed, because one of those iterations might actually catch on. So we're going to focus on putting out great content this year and next year. We're going to focus on that always, but it's definitely going to be a brand building year for us this year. We're going to reach out and talk to those people that make the most sense for collaboration, more podcasters, more influencers, not just focusing solely on Instagram, as we've done in like 2022. It was a lot of Instagram. I think the social media needle is moving a little bit. We actually have a new YouTube. We've had our YouTube channel for a long time, but we haven't done much with it. So we're actually, our Bartender Lab director, Chandler, is putting out her weekly tasting videos. Todd and myself are going to be putting out tasting videos using our glassware sponsor, glassware, and then doing some blind tastings and 60-second tastings. And then Jen is going to, our other collaborator, Jennifer, is going to be putting out some content on there as well. So for us, it's about maximizing our channels, maximizing where we're at on social media, and doing it well and doing it right.
So. You want to give a shout out to that glassware sponsor?
Yes, the Neat Glass. It is not your typical spirits glass. It has a wider bowl. I don't have one in front of me, but there's a links on our website. It's the goal of this glass is to take away the burn of the alcohol as it reaches the nose, so that you're left with just the esters, you're left with just the flavor profile, you're left with just what's in the, you know, the spirit, as opposed to just dipping your nose into a tiny, you know, tulip and just getting burned with spirits.
And for people that want to find your website, what is your website?
Bevfluence.com.
And at Bevfluence for your socials?
At Bevfluence on all the socials. We got lucky, and we're also on LinkedIn, so you can join our, for the, you know, those on the professional social medias, join our LinkedIn group and page as well, and you'll see us sharing other professional stories and other things like that.
You mentioned cider and you talked deep into cider, and that's one of the things you said, geeking out. I mean, that's one of the things I love in this forum of this podcast is, you said the Canary Islands was known for its banana liqueur, right? So in my head, and you can speak more to that experience briefly, it's probably no different than why every other farmer in the beginning made some sort of preservative for what they were farming for, right?
Absolutely. The cheapest way to move grain is to make it into a liquid. The most profit from moving grain is to turn it into a liquid. So you have throughout the humanity is you had any type of beverage you could figure out, beer, cider, wine, other kind of poultice type, beverages where you ground up whatever you had and you fermented it, turned it into a beverage, you could move it a lot easier. 500 pounds of grain turns into X number of gallons, and it's easier to move and you get a better profit. So throughout our history, we have taken these creative steps to really kind of, number one, make things easier and preserve them at the same time. You can only store wheat for so long before it turns bad, gets moldy, and you can no longer eat it. And that's your food source. That's your calories. So you ferment it, kill off all of the mold, kill off anything that could hurt you, and you've got beer. And you drank that through the winter months. Whatever you had left, you turned it into bread, and you were able to store that. Even bread itself, as we all know, goes moldy. So it was a way of preserving the limited number of foodstuffs and maximizing our calories.
Justin, you and Bedfluence are part of that heartbeat of what's happening in the industry. Are there certain trends you're seeing that seem to stand out more, things that are going away or things that are on the upswing?
Absolutely. We're working on our trends report now for 2024 through 2025. We've seen things that we thought were going to be trends fizzle out very quickly. One of the trends you're going to see is the continuation of low or no alcohol products. It is fascinating to me, and I'm not gonna trash these brands. I think they're putting out something that people are looking for. Non-alcoholic gin, non-alcoholic, whiskey, things like that. Absolutely. Go try them, go taste them. But also go and just make some tea. You can do that too. But I think that's gonna be a growing trend, especially the low alcohol. Even in a bar, like, hey, I want something that's not going to put me on my ass. Ask for something low alcohol. Bartenders are rushing to that trend to make sure that they can provide those services and that cocktail so that they're still getting the sale as opposed to somebody ordering a soda or ordering water. So I think that's going to be a big trend this year and into next. It's also, it falls into that same kind of health conscious, I want to drink less, I want to drink healthier, I want to be healthier type of trend.
You talk about the low or no ABV. And for me, I enjoy the flavor of the whiskey, but I also enjoy the spirit of a whiskey. I enjoy the essence of a wine and the whole experience that it's supposed to provide. But I did stop to say, I've had a couple cocktails out, or I've had a couple drinks. I don't want to leave the party, but I still want to participate. And knowing that there's a non-alcoholic or a low ABV where I can, instead of getting a glass with soda water and a lime, I can at least feel like there's some participation in being part of the experience. And if you're a really good craft cocktail bar, you're going to give somebody that they don't feel like they're missing out on something. But if I've had a couple already, I know when I'm done. Yeah. I think that's, for me, health conscious as well, to know that I have some alternative to keep going and I don't have to stop, or I don't have to go over the top and create a scenario that I don't want to be a part of either.
Absolutely. When I'm doing yard work, mowing the lawn, all the fun, you know, trimming the trees, all the fun stuff. And, you know, you start to get this, you know, start to sweat. You're outside, the sun's bearing down on you. One of my favorite things is hop water. My parents would think it was the silliest thing in the world if I told them I want to make hop water, but it's super refreshing without any buzz. It's just hop water. So it's really, and there's quite a few brands out there. They're refreshing. They're tasty. And they're actually hydrating. it's a great way to provide the flavor and, to your point, you know, still be part of the experience without having to, you know, to get, you know, wasted. So absolutely. I do enjoy hop water. I don't know that I'm going to rush out and buy a lot of non-alcoholic spirits, but I support the trend. I think we should all be healthier, number one, myself included. We should absolutely be, you know, figure out a way to be healthier, just for our own sakes. So I'm down for the industry going in this direction in a major way.
You shared your interaction with your professor who told you or suggested take a look at consulting. You talked about going to Kentucky, and there were mentors around you that shared their love of bourbon and introduced that to you. Who mentors you today? Who influences you?
That's a very good question. I do have a few industry giants who I talk to on the regular, who help guide me in these, not necessarily guide me always, but hey, where should I go in 2025 is a conversation I had with one of them 2 weeks ago. And one of them said, Taiwan, you know, there's some opportunity there. So, I do have those people. Stephen Beal is one of them. Those in the industry know that he's the giant behind quite a few of Diageo's biggest, most successful brands now. But at the time, it was just an idea in a room, and he helped develop those. So Stephen Beal is definitely one of those. Stephen Gould out in Denver is another one that I consider a mentor who I can call up and say, hey, I really, you know, kind of want to talk about this, and I'd love to get your insight. And I also look to others who are not necessarily mentors, but I feel very comfortable talking with them and just kind of exchanging ideas. And our team itself, I think we kind of mentor each other. I think that's part of the BevFluence maybe motto, or just our kind of our soul, I guess you could say, is just talking things out and figuring things out on our own. And we'll pick a topic and we'll tear it apart for weeks on a Zoom call, just over and over and over again until we beat it to death. And that honestly helps us in that debate, in that time frame, really kind of understand what we should be doing, what we should be focusing on, and where we should go. And I encourage people to sit down and do that, do these, and do a mental retreat, pick some topics and just beat them to death until you figured out what it means to you. One of the things in our experiences we do is we do that. In addition to just our team, we as a group will sit around and we'll not necessarily the debate. You know, we have all the fun stuff. We have the tastings. We have the deep dives into the region. We have food, obviously, and discussions and pairings and different things like that, where we're working on content together. But we'll also sit around and just say, okay, let's see where the conversation goes. And that's, to me, the conversation is one. Conversation can be its own mentor. So I definitely recommend having conversations with anybody and everybody. Learn what you really think, and that's going to help you grow professionally for anyone out there. Don't be afraid of that conversation.
BevFluence is a philosophical organization, and you get to know who you are, don't you?
You really do. There are days and where I wake up and I'm like, what? What did I just agree to? So, yeah, we try and think as deeply as we can about the industry. There is a lot of noise in any industry, and we don't want to be that. We want to be a type of compass for the industry and for thought leadership. So yeah, that's definitely always been one of our goals, is to help others understand, and we can't do that unless we ourselves understand.
Well, I'm grateful for this time to understand more and this conversation. Is there anything we haven't talked about on the podcast today? Anything you want the listeners to know more about BevFluence or you?
Well, I do like long walks on the beach, as is proof on my background picture. But I think we've covered quite a bit. I'd be happy to continue the conversation another time if we need. If somebody writes in, I know you get hundreds of letters a week.
At least one a year.
Also, I don't know who writes letters other than me anymore, but yeah.
And it's usually my mom.
Well, there you go. Perfect. Well, when she listens and she writes her letter, if there's something we missed, we'll catch up on it again. In the meantime, yeah, I'm looking forward to listening to more of your episodes and to kind of sharing our experience together, because I have a feeling that we're going to not just us and Fermented Adventures, but your audience as well. Hopefully we'll connect a little deeper over the next few years and really kind of learn each other a little better.
You know, one of the things that resonated for me through this conversation, Justin, has been that we're in the space where there are 24 hours a day, and to what we provide, the content we provide, yes, we want those human beings to listen to us. We want them to watch us, because there's so much stuff going on. So there is somewhat of a competition for time. But the reality of it is, we're all here trying to have that experience, and we can learn and grow from each other. And you and I can talk. And now you're taking me on a new journey where I'm now trying to find some liqueur from the Canary Islands that I've never had before. Or I'm booking a tour, a cruise like you took, to try to have that experience for my own life's journey. And I think that's one of the beauties of this environment that we're creating. BevFluence is out there. You're bringing experiences, you're bringing knowledge, you're bringing information to the masses. And we have a chance to enjoy that together. And we're on the same path. We just have a different way of bringing it to the community.
I think I agree with that. And I think that's powerful to recognize. Some of my most ardent positions on any one topic come from my willingness to talk to people and learn what I really think. And that's not to say I'm easily, swayed or easily moved, but in debates, not just arguments, not just right, left, north, south, whatever position you want to take, cold ferment versus, non-chill filter, those discussions and those deep dives will help you understand better everyone, not you, but everyone on the planet, what we really think and where we really stand. And I look forward to continuing those conversations and really just kind of sharing experiences, because that's, to your point, that's what it's all about. Social media, I think, has helped a lot with that, giving someone's own experience and letting you decide whether that's something you wanted to. My wife consumes podcasts and TikTok when we're planning a trip, because she can see real people going to real restaurants, talking to real other people, and not just a Yelp review. So that's how she planned our trip to London, was TikTok. So,
well, I'm looking forward to our next deep dive. I'm so grateful for your time today. Thanks for being a friend of Fermented Adventure. Check out BevFluence, what they're doing. See what you can bring into your world and how you can be a part of it. And maybe we'll all be on some sort of trip together. So, Justin, thanks again for your time. And maybe next time we'll raise a glass and cheers.